views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hunco Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hunco Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the DC movement should be referred to Hunco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 so which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Hunco Radio Network, I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you!
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way, then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I've heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories. Watch them
flee. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
All right. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And fresh topics aplenty we have. I know I'm not going to get to everything. I got a hell of a stack of stuff in front of me here tonight. Greetings to everyone. Sorry I didn't make it last week. I have gotten this vicious cold that is going around. Still got a touch of it here. My head is still a little stuffed up. I don't know if my voice sounds any different on the radio or not, but it's I'll tell you what. I had to help eat out of me here for the last week and a half. I'm going to be honest with you, I haven't been kicked by anything like that since they started giving me flu shots back in the service days. You know, I never had the flu in my life until the Air Force said, here, you, get over there, get in line, get your flu shot. Which, you know, you don't tell them no. And I'll tell you something, I got the flu for, Christ, 4 or 5 years after I was taking those flu shots each year. And then they went away, 10, 12, 15 years of Christ, you know, I didn't have any problems whatsoever. But now, I don't know, whatever it is that's going around, everybody and their uncle got it, and I somehow or another did not avoid it. You know, I don't know if it was my diet was down or what the hell was going on here. Maybe just turn it into an old fart. Maybe it's just the baddest case of hay fever to come down the tubes in a long time. I don't know. But at any rate, thank God we're kicking it over, getting back into the world here, because the world is going crazy. Make no mistake about that, folks. The first one I got for you here tonight off the AP by Lolita C. Baldur. And this is, as always, usual disclaimer here, folks. All articles read on this program are for informational, educational, and discussion purposes only. The Obama administration is pushing to make it easier for the government to tap into internet and email communications. But the plan has already drawn condemnation from private firms. May be wary of its costs and scope. Frustrated by sophisticated and often encrypted phone and email technologies, U.S. officials say that law enforcement needs to improve its ability to eavesdrop on conversations involving terrorism, crimes, or other public safety issues. That's a broad one there, other public safety issues. Critics worry the changes are an unnecessary invasion of privacy and would only make citizens and businesses more vulnerable to identity theft and espionage. The new regulations that would be sent to Congress next year would affect American and foreign companies that provide communication services inside the United States. It would require service providers to make the plain text of encrypted conversations over the phone, computer, or email readily available to law enforcement, according to federal officials and analysts. The mandate would likely require companies to add backdoors or other changes to the system that would allow a wiretap to capture an unscrambled version of a conversation. Now, those affected by the changes would include online services and networking sites such as Facebook and Skype, as well as phone systems that deliver encrypted email such as BlackBerry. The way we communicate has changed dramatically since 1994, but telecommunications law has is not kept up. By the end, the law has created a significant national security and public safety problem, said Valerie E. Caproni, the FBI's general counsel. She said the changes would not expand law enforcement authority and would involve legally authorized intercepts on calls or emails sent by terrorists or other criminals. The changes would allow companies to respond quickly to wiretap requests from local, state, and federal authorities. Now, the New York Times first reported today about White House plans to submit the new bill next year. Law enforcement is already able to monitor telephone conversations. In the old days, the technology was simple to wiretap, said cybersecurity expert James Lewis, a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. As technologies have gotten better and faster and bigger, it's harder and harder for law enforcement to intercept. Lewis said law enforcement officials have been pushing for expanded access. He said the technology is available to make the changes and allow authorities to tap into conversations encrypted by communications companies as they move from one person to another. Communications companies, he said, may have concerns about the costs of modifying their systems or software to allow the intercepts. The government may have to provide some funding aid. Well, we knew there was some talk in here. And the rest of this is all blah, blah, blah. A lot of people are weighing in on it. But, you know, hey, if anybody's going to weigh in on it, I'm going to weigh on it. This is my show. it's silly. Look, you got to read between the lines here in a couple of things, folks. Number one, what are they telling you? That they have not been able to get into a lot of phone conversations, especially over cell phones. Encrypted, so can Skype. I don't know why they would have a problem with Facebook. There's nothing encrypted on Facebook. Everybody knows about what everybody is doing on Facebook. You know, I could just imagine the FBI having to sit there watching people play Frontierville all day, or Farmville, or Dumbville, which is even better. I could just imagine that. How many of them are rifling through Zynga Poker as we sit here waiting for the terrorist messages to get passed from country to country? It's great. Some of the things, you know, they just come to mind here. The way we communicate has changed dramatically since 1994. What they're trying to tell us here is that since 1994, for the last 16 years, they've been having a problem with this. Now, I'll tell you, there's probably a lot more of a problem than they're letting on here. And they're worried about stuff getting through, which, look, no doubt about the fact we want to know about any terrorist communications that may be going on within the United States. But how the hell do they plan on doing this? Now, they want to have a readily available, for law enforcement, plain text of encrypted conversations. Now, can you imagine? Just imagine how much of these conversations that go on a daily basis they are going to have to begin to store to make it available. How long are they going to have to store it for? What is the key here? How big is your storage facility going to be? What will the costs of the storage facility going to be? You know, what are the costs of monitoring all this? And, of course, how much is the federal government going to go on this? All right, all in there. But the biggest issue here, obviously, is your privacy. You know, to be secure in our persons, papers, and effects, as is reads in the Constitution under the Fourth Amendment. Now, let's see, where are we going with the security thing here? That's what I want to know. Now, look, I'll tell you something, folks. This is something years ago, you know, and I was one of the few out there that said, you know, we're going to have to watch this Patriot Act. Grant you that you have probably will have no problems with it now when it comes out. You know, and of course, trustworthy fool that I am, you know, thinking, well, the Republicans are in there. Look, they're going to have to do their job. We are at a war on terror. But can you just imagine how big of a tool the Patriot Act was going to be, you know, should the Democrats get into Congress? And trust me, they will look at that Patriot Act, and if they're looking for any justification for going on here, well, they'll find it right there in the Patriot Act. You know, and that was the kind of thing that worried me here. You know, stop and think about it. What it would be like if Hillary was the president. How many people would be getting tapped and looked at and whatnot now? And Christ only knows how much Obama's going on with here now. You know, personally, I think he's being kept in the dark. What's Eric Holder been up to? You know, what about the rest of his administration? Who were they checking on? Who were they looking at? You know, they are worried about everybody. including all the tea parties out there. There's something else I got to get to here later on tonight. Matter of fact, I'm going to get to that right now. You folks, at least think about this here for a minute, though. This isn't really going to go into effect until next year, if anything happens, if there's a bill written. And it's just the kind of thing that they want. Now, don't forget, they're going to get elected out of here or get themselves unelected under a month here now. Well, just over a month now, if you think about it, November the 2nd. But it's, it may or may not happen. You know, do I trust the Republicans to stop this? Yeah, I don't know. Tough call there, baby. You know, they were the ones that helped sign the Patriot Act into law to begin with. So, real tough call here. But, at any rate, this one here, this ought to rattle your tree just a little bit. Now, think about this. CBS. Now, look, these people have always been left-wingers. There's no doubt about it. But they're jumping in on this on the Tea Party smearing with the show CSI. That was by Matthew Bowen. The September 23rd season premiere plot of CBS's hit drama CSI Crime Scene Investigation involved guest star Justin Bieber attending right-wing political events before being targeted as a suspect in bombings of a Las Vegas Police Department funeral. Alessandra Stanley of New York Times wrote on September 24 that Bieber played a domestic terrorist with Tea Party leanings. Even though the episode made no direct reference to the Tea Party, the right-wing protest depicted resembled a Tea Party protest, at least according to some viewers who have commented on FreeRepublic.com, a conservative blog. Yes, yours truly is a freeper, although I gotta admit I haven't posted over there for quite some time. Big Hollywood and big government publisher Andrew Breitbart said the show's producers are undoubtedly using the program as a propaganda mechanism. And he finds it particularly disturbing that an episode like this popped up so close to the upcoming midterm elections. This is predictable behavior from Hollywood, Breitbart told the Daily Caller in a phone interview. Over the past year and a half, the Democratic Party, left-wing media, and now Hollywood have done anything they can to portray the Tea Party movement as a violent Timothy McVeigh-esque or as a racist movement. Bieber's casting was an attempt to draw in a big audience for the season opener and to connect different elements of pop culture, the show's creator, Anthony Zucker, had said in a statement. Now, Breitbart said the Tea Party movement has consistently proven left-wing claims wrong, and the Tea Partiers have found alternative media outlets to fight back against what they see as an inaccurate portrayal on the traditional mainstream media. Breitbart further added that he wouldn't be surprised if Hollywood continues to add what he sees as a subliminal propagandist message to their productions. This is the reason why so many people don't watch these shows anymore, Breitbart said. Well, amen. There's a lot more reasons than that. Number one, the amount of commercials that you got to listen through. The way the commercials are getting blasted through your speakers when it is time for them to come up. And plus, all the rest of the left-wing leanings that come from the three major networks, the alphabets. They're terrible. You know, it really is. And it just gets to a point where you get sick of it. You know, what passes off as entertainment on shows like CSI and Law and Order are not entertainment. You know, I don't care what anybody says. I do not want to sit there and be entertained by three cops chasing around a child molester. You know, or someone else who is beating up his foreign wife for whatever reason. You know, it's they call it drama. You know, I just call it disgusting. It's puke. I don't know where these people come up with all this crap. For me, I would rather sit down and watch Ginger and Fred dancing around a screen. I'd rather watch the Duke. I'd rather watch Bogart. I'd rather watch a whole lot of things out there. Even some of the newer movies that come out there. Matter of fact, the last one I just watched was really good, Robin Hood with Russell Crowe. The latest version of it. Very good flick. If you get a chance, check it out. But the whole thing here about these people trying to paint these tea parties down, I don't think it's working, to be honest with you. Every now and then I will hear one of the left-wingers around here talking about, oh, they're just a bunch of really pissed off people. They're all angry. Well, of course they're angry, you know. But I don't think it's anger that you're looking at. I think what you're looking at here is resolve, you know. Taxed enough already pretty much stands for itself. You know, teeth enough already for what's going on here. All right, now, speaking of taxes, and speaking of other things on the government front here, we got more and more to get for here. This one here, nope, that's not the one. Ba-ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba. Running through. Now this one here. Now this one, folks, we're going to talk about this one for a little bit. It took me a while to dig around through the internet here today and try to find some sort of text on this bill. The PDF version of it, it is not out yet. President Obama signed today a $30 billion loan fund and made all sorts of things that are going on in this bill. Now, as always, these bills are 1,000 pages long. Excuse me. I almost got the idea that I was going to print it out here tonight. And somewhere around me here, I think I have the bill number, should you want to go take a look at it. I think it's 3257 or something along that. But it's incredible. It's incredible what's going on here. Now, the spin on this is just making it all sound unbelievable. And I have perused this, but next week we're going to hear about it in toto. I promise you, this is something that I have definitely got on a front burner here. Scoring a prized political victory 5 weeks before the November 2 elections, President Barack Obama today signed a bill to help small businesses expand and hire by cutting their taxes and creating a $30 billion loan fund. Now, Obama said the incentives will help small businesses right away, but any hiring may not be enough to help some Democrats ahead of crucial midterm elections in which voters are expected to vent their frustrations over a slow-growing economy and near 10% unemployment. Now, the bill had been delayed for months, blocked in the Senate by Republicans. Most in the GOP objected to the loan fund, comparing it to the 2008 financial industry bailout, and arguing that it would encourage banks to make loans to risky borrowers. Two GOP senators, George Voinovich of Ohio and George Lemieux of Florida, helped Democrats break the filibuster this month, and the bill passed. Now, Obama said small businesses are the anchors of our main streets, creating most of the jobs in the country. It was crucial that we cut taxes and make more loans available to entrepreneurs, he said, before signing the bill in the East Room of the White House. Today, after a long and tough fight, I am signing a small business jobs bill that does exactly that. Now, the bill creates a $30 billion government fund to help encourage lending to small businesses, many of which have been having difficulty securing bank loans and credit. The fund will be available to community banks, which could use the money to leverage billions more in loans. Now, that's key to stop and think about there. Okay, that means they can keep that on reserve and leverage it to go and get bigger loans. And from who? Well, from the federal. Who else? The legislation also includes about $12 billion in tax breaks for small businesses, 8 separate tax cuts that take effect on Monday. One such provision increases to $500,000 the amount of investments that businesses could be allowed to write off this year and next. The measure also gives a boost to some Small Business Administration loan programs. The new law follows earlier administration efforts to help small businesses, including 8 different tax cuts, as well as a temporary payroll tax people off the unemployment lines. This bill will do 2 things, Obama said before signing the bill. It's going to cut taxes, and it's going to make more loans available for small business. It's a great victory for America's entrepreneurs. Now, several business owners who stood with Obama for the signing echoed his sentiments afterward. Prashi Devada, founder of Synergy Enterprises Incorporated, an information technology company in Silver Spring, Maryland, told reporters that she'll be hiring at least 20 people as a result of the new law. She said she hired about 20 people under contracts funded by the economic stimulus. Obviously, this bill makes a huge difference to me as a small business. Okay, well, we'd like to find out what Synergy Enterprises does, exactly what you're doing with all this government money, and whether or not you're turning a profit with it. Kind of important at this point in time. Some of the things have got to be looked at into here. Some of the things I'm going to be getting back to you on. A, all of these big tax breaks. Now, we've been hearing over the last couple of months that he's going to start allowing up to $500,000 total write-off on whatever a business gets into, which means you're going to be allowed to write off 100% of whatever it is you invest. All business, you're going to invest in hardware. Well, that's a good thing. You know, because in the long term, you know, and by hardware, I mean machinery, trucks, what have you. You know, they would, you know, in the past, if you invested $100,000 into a new piece of machinery, you can only write off the depreciation of that machinery over its expected lifetime. And that expected lifetime was something that was determined by whoever it was that sold it to you. You know, somebody sold you a machine that was worth, you know, $100,000 and said it should last for 10 years with just this much maintenance. Well, then guess what? You can only write that off with its maintenance over the next 10 years. You can only write off 10% a year, and that's it. You know, that's all you're allowed to do. Now, this is another story here. And to be honest with you, folks, what I'm looking at here is this is more a way to get people trapped into the debt scheme here. Now, To me, I don't see any reason here why any business owner would want to take any of his own money and invest it in his own business. Okay, because the tax breaks that are coming down here, well, maybe. Maybe if he's got some money he's going to run into it, but he doesn't know what his taxes are going to go to as far as his income taxes and whatnot. So is anything going to help out there? Nah, for businesses that are about to make a jump on a loan or do something like that, yeah, all of a sudden this is looking good. But who is it that they're going to be making the loans to? You know, this is the kind of thing, and this is where you really got to stop and take a look at it. All right, as a rule, 4 out of 5 businesses fail within the first 5 years. You know, the old saying that most businesses don't plan to fail, but they do fail, to one of the reasons for this. But generally, as a rule, you can expect 4/5 of the businesses go in each year to drop out within the first 5 years of them getting in there. During those first 5 years, you were allowed to write off all of your sinking in costs. But by the 5th year, if you didn't show a profit, you were basically forced out of business by the government. I mean, that's where it goes. It's just one of those kind of things. I mean, you know, it's attrition. You know, now if this money is going out there in loans, that's another story. How are these loans going to be backed up? All right, it's one thing for you to go to an investor and say, look, Mr. Investor, you know, I need to take $1 million and get my business started up. Now, here is my plan. Now, if Mr. Investor's got the opportunity to take a look at your plan, he's going to say, okay, I'll invest in it, and I'm going to take this much out of it over this much time. You know, maybe I'll give you an option to buy me out in 5 or 10 or 20 years or what have you. You know, whatever it is he agrees on. But one thing's for damn sure, Mr. Investor knows full well that if you go out, okay, you know, the only recourse he's going to have is to whatever you've got with him in the contract. It may be that he will own all of the equipment. Maybe. All right, but now small business loans are another story altogether. At any rate, Mr. Investor knows damn well that he could lose on this, which is why he's going to carefully invest in it. I mean, he behooves it to do it for himself, because if he doesn't, who else is going to? You know, obviously you believe that your business is going to go, or else you wouldn't be coming at him. But Small Business Association, they look at things a whole lot different. All right, they want to look at hard property behind you. You go into and get an SBA loan out, well, how much equity do you have in your home? You know, and if they can, they're going to flip it over into that. You know, what will you be buying in your business? How much will it be worth a year from now, 2 years from now, should you go out of business? They look at a lot of things out there, but they are generally looking at hard lines of credit for either hard, good things or, well, tangibles is basically what I'm looking for. Real estate, you know, machinery, what have you. You know, they're not going to go in and lend you $500,000 to go out and buy some raw material and, you know, allow you to turn that raw material into a finished product and make a profit on it. It ain't going to work that way. They are not going to take that big a dive on just the raw materials. They want to see something else behind it. They want to have it backed up. And that's where we get back into the old, well, debt is slavery sort of thing. You know, and that's exactly what debt is. You get yourself into debt with these banks, and this is one of those things, I've said it forever, you know, that, look, their whole goal in life is to get as many people in the world as in debt to them as they possibly can. Yeah, it's a nasty, nasty thing, and that's pretty much what I'm looking at here more than anything else. But I will be getting back to you on it next week when I have had a chance to overlook this bill 100%. And I've got it. I've got it down here in a printable form. Damn, I'm surprised I don't have it sitting right here in front of me right now. But it's, never mind, fools. It's H.R. 5297. I actually do have it right in front of me here. And it's, I would urge you all to go take a good look at this. I am going to be going right through it. As always, there's tons of stuff in here. You know, it's got to be going over. You know, it's got to be 500 or 600 pages long at any rate. All right, folks, moving onwards here. The Obama monster has come out again today. And for all you kids in school, I hope you're going to love this. He's pressing for longer school years. Well, this is by Erica Werner off the AP. Barely into the new school year, President Barack Obama issued a tough love message to students and teachers today. Their year in a classroom should be longer, and poorly performing teachers should get out. Whoa. Yeah, I'll bet this just took the NEA and shook them by the short hairs. American students are falling behind some of their foreign counterparts, especially in math and science, and that's got to change, Obama said. seeking to revive a sense of urgency that education reform may have lost amid the recessions focused on the economy, Obama declared that the future of the country is at stake. Now, whether jobs are created here, high-end jobs that support families and support the future of the American people, is going to depend on whether or not we can do something about these schools, the president said in an interview on NBC's Today Show. Now, U.S. schools through high school offered an average of 180 instruction days per year, according to the education commissioner of the state, compared to an average of 197 days for lower grades and 196 days for upper grades in countries with the best student achievement levels, including Japan, South Korea, Germany, and New Zealand. Now, that month makes a difference, the president said. It means that kids are losing a lot of what they learned during the school year during the summer. It's especially severe for poorer kids who may not see as many books in the house during the summers, aren't getting as many educational opportunities. Obama said teachers and their profession should be more highly honored, as in China and some other countries, he said. And he said he wanted to work with the teachers' unions, but he also said that unions should not defend a status quo in which one-third of the children are dropping out. He challenged them not to be resistant to change. And I'll tell you something, he's not too far off the mark here with this whole thing. All right, listen, we had a hand up here in the room. It looks like he took off. Oh, well. But at any rate, folks, we're at the bottom of the hour here. I'm going to take a short break. We'll get back. We'll talk a little bit more about the schools, education, and all the grief that goes on with that right after this word from our sponsor, which is my boy Bob down at Herncoat.com. So, folks, hang in there. You're listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncoat.com. We'll be right back.
Some statistics are surprising, some are unbelievable, and some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%, and that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it?
Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the Lost Cat Magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
All right, this next question is for Caroline. Caroline, if you take the bus 60 miles to school at 5:30 a.m. and the bus is traveling at an average of 30 miles per hour, how are you going to get to your prenatal appointment and still make it to homeroom on time?
Some students are tackling more than just their schoolwork, which is why more than 30% of them aren't graduating. But you can give them the boost they need to make it through by visiting boostup.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
we're back. Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com, the best in internet talk radio. I'm your host. My name is Mark Belcher. I'm with you for the next half an hour here. The topic when we left here was schools. Now, folks, Mr. Obama wanted to add another month to the school year. Is this really going to bring us up above Japan, South Korea, Germany, and New Zealand? I'm here to tell you that it's highly unlikely that another month of liberal indoctrination is going to help the kids in the maths and sciences. It just ain't going to work out. And some of the stuff that goes on in these public schools, I'm here to tell you something. Until they bring back corporal punishment, until they allow these teachers to stand these kids up and beat the living shit out of them, nothing's going to happen. You know, I hate to say it in just such a fashion. But, you know, when I stop and think about what it is then, and I talk to some of the people that are involved in education now, and that is the difference. You know, I went to Catholic school, and I'm here to tell you that if you get out of line with a nun, you showed up without your homework, you were punished. She took an 18-inch ruler, first 6 inches of which were handle, and beat you severely about the head and shoulders with it. Next day, you did not come back with it. I mean, despite from the embarrassment, you know, you would go home with the cuts and the bruises. Mom and Dad would take a look at the cuts and bruises and say, why did that happen? And you would get, he'd say, well, I forgot to do my homework for Sister Mary Gasolinas. And next thing would happen, Mom and Dad would get out their instruments of torture and beat you even further. So you did your homework. You know, it was that simple. You acted up in class, the 18-inch ruler came back out again, and you would get it again. Severely beaten about the head, shoulders, buttocks, hands, arms, whatever the hell they could reach. You know, if staying after school was the norm, you know, or called for whatever your particular infraction was, you stayed after school. You know, sometimes it meant putting a broom in your hands, making you work. These teachers aren't allowed to do this anymore. They're not even allowed to say anything that might make the child feel bad. Now, as a result, what do you got? Kids going nuts. I have a relative who does substitution work in the Philadelphia public school system. Some of the horror stories that she will tell me about the public schools are nuts. You know, the first one she got started in on the other day was the free lunch programs. She says, I don't understand this. She says, you know, if the first kid that comes down the line says, ew, who's going to like that? Well, none of them will eat it. Now, a lot of this is all just, you know, bologna sandwiches, she'll tell you, peanut butter and jelly, just the same kind of stuff people have been feeding their kids forever. You know, and of course it's going to pass the nutritional standards or whatever it is, but the kids will take the peanut butter and jelly sandwich or whatever it is, and it's still wrapped in its plastic, and, you know, and they don't walk 15 feet from where they picked it up at in the school cafeteria and chuck it right in the trash. Don't eat a damn thing of it. You know, throw out. They end up throwing out about twice as much as the kids eat each day. So, you know, whatever it is that comes in on a truck on a daily basis in the morning for the kids' lunches, two-thirds of it makes it right to the trash can without ever getting opened or even tasted. You know, she was telling me that in one of the meetings there that the kids, matter of fact, I think I'm going to have her in here one night to talk about some of the stories. Because they're horror stories. You know, the kids just run rampant all over everything. There is no authority. There is no discipline. There is no nothing. There is no incentive for these kids to learn whatsoever. Now, grant you, okay, unless the teacher can make a subject interesting, you know, you didn't really get good at a subject. But the fact of the matter was, you became passably educated in the subject, or you got beaten. I mean, it was that simple when we went to school, you know. Now, the public schools probably weren't as bad as the Catholic schools. I grant you that, you know. And the priests were no different. Priests just come right over and slap you silly, you know. And if you gave them a little bit of back talk or you did something even really dumb, like reach up and try to smack him, then you were looking to get the shit beat out of him physically with fists, you know. They would think nothing about it. And once again, you damn sure didn't go home and tell your parents. See, you know, you went home all beat up. You just told them you got in a fight with another kid. You damn sure don't tell them that you got in a fight with a priest or one of the teachers or what have you, because you were just looking for your parents to turn around and beat the shit out of you twice as bad. You know, I mean, that's the way it worked. Yeah. We had nuns. You had no choice. You know, you learned. You know, you learned what it was. And I got to admit, you know, half of the teachers I had were probably interesting teachers and the other half were probably boring. But still, I graduated, you know. I remember that when I went to high school, I think out of the 440 boys in my class, there was three or four of them that didn't make it to the end, you know? And two of them was because they died. And the other two, I know, shipped off, went to a public school somewhere, probably didn't graduate from there. But now, with the public schools out there, fully one-third of these kids don't graduate. And I'm talking about even in the blue ribbon schools, like in the school I live in here out in the country now, you know? Well over a third of the kids that start there as a freshman don't graduate from that school. They drop out. This is an alarming thing, folks, and it's because these kids just get sick and tired of the whole liberal indoctrination and the whole mantra. They're not being taught anything of any usefulness. Social studies being at the highest priority of what goes on there. You know, how to get along, how to make sure that no one feels bad. And, of course, in the process of making sure that no one feels bad, they all end up feeling bad. You know, they all get ridiculous. I mean, you know, look at the tattoos some of these kids are coming out with. Look at the piercings that they're coming out with. You know, one of the other room owners over here, Charlotte, says, "Mommy, why can't I get a job?" And, I mean, it was basically about 30 pictures of kids out there that have just totally disfigured themselves through these body ink piercings, and you name it. I mean, it's just insane the way these kids look. And well, what the hell, you know? Yeah, those pics were sick, weren't they? There, Gary. Yeah, my buddy Gary in the room here, he saw the rest of them there, too. Yeah, someone had to make it view. You know, you damn sure wouldn't want to ask one of those girls out in any of those pictures on a date, you know? The hell with that, you know? But, I mean, it's just, what is going on in the education world here? I'm sorry, this isn't going to go on. Now, to get in even deeper with this article here, I'll tell you something that's going to be really sick. Now, this guy has just turned around and I don't know how to say this. I would say, I could turn around and say, well, look, he pissed off the NEA. Well, what are they going to do about it? Well, you got to stop and think about something here. This is where you're going to see a little bit of a power struggle going on here. This NEA is either going to respond to him negatively or positively. Either way, it's not going to bode well for the teachers. You know, should they respond negatively, well, he's just going to turn around and cut their money back. You know, if they respond positively by starting to toss out the better teachers, well, the rest of them are all going to stand up and unionize against them now, aren't they? This is going to be quite a showdown coming in the world series. Basically, the point that I'm trying to make here, I can't wait to see how the NEA responds to all this. Or whether or not anything of along this sort actually happens. You know, I will be quite interested to see over the next couple of months how many articles we have, you know, coming down through the major news wires here about this teacher getting fired for poor performance. How are they going to measure this performance? You know, I remember here up in Massachusetts here, you know, that we were all worried about the MCAS, how teachers can't teach their subject anymore. They have to teach to... Well, you know, I'm here to tell you that the standardized tests are something that everybody had to go through once upon a time. We all did. The Philadelphia school system, we all had standardized tests, despite the fact that it was Catholic school. Maybe it was Catholic school standardized tests. I don't know. But I do know one thing, that every damn Catholic school kid in the city took the exact same test that I did. And, you know, and we were all actually measured against each other. You know, now whether or not students passing tests was a measure of it, I don't know. What I'd like to see is a measure of it. And I've said this a few times in the past. You know, and this is the kind of thing that, you know, if you really want to stop and think about fixing education, number one, you get the government the hell out of it completely and totally and fully. You put it back into the hands of the community. Education should be financed by industry. Personally, I don't think public education should go beyond the eighth grade. I think beyond giving you good reading skills, good writing skills, and a basic foundation in math and some of the sciences, public education shouldn't go any further than that. I think that by the time you're 12 or 13 years old, you ought to have some idea of where the hell you are going in life, of what your talents are, what your desires are, where it is you want to be. And listen, I was an auto mechanic for most of my working life. I knew I was going to be an auto mechanic when I was 11 years old. I didn't think about anything else. I couldn't be bothered with anything else. What the hell went on here? Math? Of course I liked math because I liked that, you know? I loved all of the ins and outs and the chemistry of combustion. You know, the chemistry of combustion was just something geometry. The geometry and trigonometry that are used to put together an automobile were just amazing. You know, how they had to absorb forces in different directions. You know, that just, that I had to know about it. You know, the geometry of steering, the geometry of suspension, you know. And there's some intricate geometry that goes on there, you know. Did you know your steering on your car was all parallelogram? You know, the short and the long arm steering in front of your car is indexed to make sure that it runs within 0 to 1 degree of the center line of that tire. You know, when you turn your tires, where you make a left turn or a right turn, you know, the inside wheel turns a little further than the outside wheel. But if you were to draw a line through the axis of both of those wheels and through the turning pivot on the joint of each of those wheels, that those lines will intersect on another line that drives directly through the rear axle. You know, now I know a lot of you guys out there are like, what the hell is he talking about here? But the point of the matter is, this is the kind of stuff I learned because that's what I was interested in. I knew where I was going to go. Now, getting back to education, by 11 or 12 or 13 years old, you should be applying to some trade school out there that is funded by an industry. You know, this whole idea of going through a high school, you know, and then getting out and going to a trade school, well, maybe we could debate that one back and forth a bit. But there's got to come a point in time when a kid's got to figure out a couple things. Number one, A, his parents aren't going to be around there to take care of him forever, you know, and he is going to have to fend for himself or herself. It's just a fact of life. That's all there is to that, okay? B, they're going to have one of two choices here. Okay, you are going to either be doing something that you like to do, or you are going to be doing something that you don't like to do. That is a choice that you have, and a choice that you will be able to make at some point in time. But you're only going to be able to do something that you like to do if you are properly trained for it. Now, this is where the industries come in. I always thought that the automotive industry, and I'll be honest with you, the automotive industry educated me for free. I went to General Motors Training Center. I was trained in every aspect of General Motors cars as sponsored by Oldsmobile. They paid for all my training. You know, it was them. It was a combination of General Motors. It was a combination of Oldsmobile and the dealership that later on hired me to go to work for. I didn't have to pay much for it. It was no big deal. You know, it was a great thing, and it was a beautiful education because I got a solid foundation. And then the next 5 years that I spent as an auto mechanic were basically, you know, as an apprentice. You started out at minimum wage. You worked at what they gave you to work at, which generally wasn't much. I remember my first 6 years in the business, all I did was jockey the cars in and out of service, do undercoats on cars. And then when I got 6 months in and under the belt, baby, they let me do oil changes. Then they let me fix water leaks in cars. But you took your time, you know. They ran you through all phases of it. And over that period, the 5 years, they took the education that you got, they built on it with 5 solid years of experience, and they made a journeyman out of you. And they knew at that point in time, you know, they were either going to have to pay you so that they could keep you, or unless you proved, of course, to be incompetent somewhere along the line, they boot you out the door, you had to go find some other line of work. You know, but the fact of the matter was, it was a good thing to do, and I believed firmly, the industry should be doing this, all right? And the industry should be paying for it. Now, if the industry wants to take you in a special way and go down even further, turn in it, make you an engineer out of you, make you a draftsman, what have you, well, maybe you should be required to work in that industry, you know, or should be required to pay that industry back for the education that they gave you. You know, I see no problem with 5% a year for over 20 years to pay that back, or 10% a year pay over the year for the next 10 years to pay it back, to fund the education for further people coming into the industry as it goes. You know, now if the industry washes up, goes down the tubes, well, so what? It'll be replaced by something else. If you can't find a job in that industry after they have educated you and you've proved yourself competent, well, then you don't have to pay them back. You can go find a job somewhere else. Start over. Do something different. At any rate, I don't believe it is the government's or the public's responsibility to provide education for anyone beyond the 8th grade, beyond the time the kid's 12 or 13 years old. You know, as I said before, now, if he wants to go on into academics, okay, get his degree in liberal arts, well, he better goddamn well have the money for it. Or convince the people who run the liberal arts education system that this kid is going to be worth their while, or somehow or another they will be able to make a buck off of his efforts down through the ages to do this. You know? But I look at the way the world is going on out there now today with education and just say, this is ridiculous. You know? You can't imagine all the waiters, waitresses, and gardeners I know that have master's degrees in something or another. you know, or have a, you know, have a bachelor's degree in this, a bachelor's degree in liberal arts, you know, a bachelor's degree in English, and what's he doing? Well, he's making pizzas now, you know. Now, that to me is a waste of $100,000 of an education, you know. Now your kid is out there making pizzas with his $100,000 worth of an education, you know. Or another one, it's, you know, digging gardens. And another one is driving a snowplow all winter. And of course, a guy driving a snowplow all winter, he's probably making the most money out of all of them. You know, probably will be able to afford paying off his student loans. But the fact of the matter is, there's so much waste, so much inefficiency, and so much uselessness that goes on in the entire education system today. So, like I said, you know, other than the general public education up to 12th and 13th, you know, you're 12 or 13 years old, 8th or 9th grade, I'd scrap it. You know, if I was king of the world, I'd scrap all of it and make them start over. And funded by the industries. If the industries want to keep their industry moving and going, then they should be providing the education for it. The automotive industry did. You know, the automotive industry proved to be the better for it. You know, that's the only thing I could say. And like I said, I never worked for any of the manufacturers that didn't educate you, you know, thoroughly. You know? And I mean, the expense was shared by them and your dealer or whoever your employer was working for. But all four of them, or all three of the ones that I worked for, and I worked for GM, Chrysler, and Ford over the years, all of them, excellent educational opportunities, excellent education that we got. You know, I mean, when I worked for the Dodge dealer, he saw to it that out of your 12 months of working during the year, you spent at least 4 weeks in education. You know, be a week here on this subject, a week over here on that subject, maybe 2 weeks on another one. I mean, we had a week-long class on just making sure that the convertible tops on the Chryslers didn't leak, you know, when they first came back with convertible tops in 85 or 86, whatever the hell it was there, maybe 87 or 88. The Chrysler LeBaron came out with a convertible top. They sent me to school for a week to make sure that I knew how to adjust those convertible tops and how to make them waterproof. You know, it wasn't an easy thing. But it was all worthwhile, and it was run by the industry. All right, folks, enough of what I got to say on education. Here we got so much more to go through. Okay, guess what, folks? Here's a good one. Petrobras becomes the third biggest oil firm. Now, this is the company here that we've been complaining about. A couple of weeks ago, maybe a month or so, I brought up the fact that, you know, why is it that all of a sudden all of the American companies are shut down from drilling in the Gulf, and yet somehow or another we found a way to run billions of dollars from the World Bank or whatever it was down to Sao Paulo, Brazil. And now, as a result of all this, Brazil's state-run Petrobras became the world's third biggest oil firm by market capitalization today, as it completed a record share issue expected to bring in about $70 billion. Now, after selling the stock on the New York Stock Exchange from last Friday in the form of American depository receipts, the company also began selling the shares today on the Sao Paulo Stock Exchange. Now, those shares rose 1.93% to $30.23 by the end of trading, higher than the 29.65 reals the new shares were priced at for trading, showing strong demand. The offering has made Petrobras the third largest oil company in the world after U.S.-based ExxonMobil and PetroChina. Brokers, though, said a long-term uncertainty, a negative pressure, lingered over the shares because of doubts over investors' returns. And here's why. The government's increase in its stake in Petrobras from 40% to 48% also generated concerns. The degree of government intervention in decisions during the whole capitalization process was too high for a publicly listed company, said Miriam Leitao, an economic columnist for the newspaper O Globo. She notes that Petrobras had lost a quarter of its value over this year because of that preoccupation. Small investors are in the hands of the government, Fabio Knuck, I couldn't say that, KNCZUK, an economics professor at the University of Sao Paulo, told AFP. Petrobras is to use the proceeds from the share sale to explore the offshore oil fields, which are so big they could make Brazil a major exporter. The company also wants to boost capital expenditure over the next 5 years to $224 billion to exploit the fresh reserves. Petrobras estimates the so-called subsalt fields could more than triple its existing proven oil reserves of 14 billion barrels. Now, folks, this is what happens when the federal government gets involved. We have just, over the last few months, shut down a good chunk of American manufacturing, American oil exploration and a lot of American jobs in the Gulf of Mexico and handed them to Brazil. And what's happening now? Oh, well, they've leveled the playing field. We're leveling out the global economy. Right. You know, the two other biggest ones out there right now are PetroChina and ExxonMobil. You gotta love it. You just gotta love it. I'm almost speechless on this. Folks, wait and see what happens down the road here from this. Wait and see what happens with politics in Brazil. Whether or not these investors are going to be able to ride this along with the government. Or whether or not the government at some point in time, A, takes over, starts making decisions that they shouldn't, where it gets sold, how much it gets sold for. Wait and see whether or not these people join OPEC. This is going to be a beautiful thing coming down the road. Well, beautiful for guys like me because I'm going to be able to scream about it. Anyway, I just thought that was something to make sure that you all keep your eye on it. Okay, another one. International news here. Okay, nope. I didn't get through to this one yet. No. Draft U.S. legislation would open the way for retaliation against China over the value of the yuan. Neither just nor fair, the state-run People's Daily said today in a commentary. Now, this bill, which passed by the U.S. House Ways Committee Means Committee on Friday, would expand the powers of the Commerce Department to allow it to impose tariffs when another nation is found to be manipulating its currency value. Duh. As the United States goes through a politically sensitive time ahead of November elections, this draft bill targeting China is neither just nor fair, said the People's Daily, the mouthpiece of the ruling Communist Party. If, as some American politicians ask, the value of the yuan were to be increased by 20% to 40%, that would not only cause problems for the Chinese economy, but would not help resolve the Sino-U.S. trade imbalance. The full House of Representatives will vote on the measure this week. Even if the House approves the measure, it is uncertain if the United States would impose tariffs. The Senate has not moved on legislation, and if the law passes, retaliation would still be at the discretion of the administration. The Obama administration maintains that Beijing is keeping its currency artificially low against the dollar to make its exports more competitive, and is showing increased signs of frustration over the long-running row, but it has also sought broader relations with China and preferred quiet diplomacy, so far resisting congressional calls to officially brand China or Beijing as a manipulator of its currency. China pledged in June to loosen its grip on the yuan, which has been effectively pegged at about 6.8 to the dollar since mid-2008. Since then, the currency has gained less than 2% against the greenback. Now, last week, before a meeting with U.S. President Barack Obama, Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao rejected a drastic appreciation of the yuan, warning that it would cause Chinese companies to go bankrupt and workers to lose their jobs. All right, Mr. Obama, let me explain something to you. The Chinese invented paper money. They have had 1,000, maybe even 2,000, but documented 1,000 years of history with it. Alright, they have made all the mistakes. They know what can happen with paper currency. They understand why it has to be backed up with substance in the treasury. They have always backed it up with substance in the treasury. Okay, and if the treasury gets low, they do something about it. Okay, why do you think the Chinese were out there buying up all those gold and silver reserves? And why do you think it is at times they turn around and sell off a chunk of it? Alright, they keep a balance sheet that is rigid as hell. Why do you think it was that the Chinese all laughed at Timothy Geithner when he made that remark at the college that American business principles and banking principles are basically sound? And they all laughed at him. Of course that. All right, turn around and complain about them manipulating their currency. Well, what are we doing with our currency? Please, what do you call it when you're quantitative easing? That, my friends, is called manipulating their currency. All right, that is devaluing your currency here. We have been at it for so long, all right, that it isn't funny. Okay, you know, look, you got to understand something, folks out there. 2 to 3% inflation. Oh, that should be an inflation figure that everybody can handle. Hell, it's only 1.5% if you look at the CPI. Yeah, right. Well, why is it that healthcare costs go up 20 to 30% each year? Why is it up to 15% over last year already? Well, that's not part of the CPI. Yeah, right, okay. Well, there's a lot of things that aren't part of the CPI, but the fact of the matter is our dollar is drastically losing on a daily basis. Has been for a long, long, long time, and that's because it is manipulated here. You're going to get into a row over the people who invented paper money. who understand its pitfalls, who understands how it has to be treated in order to be kept some soundness to it, all right, and tell them that you, in your last short 100 years of experience, all right, have somehow or another got the right to tell them how to deal with it, well, you get another thing coming there, bud. I'm sorry, you know? Healthcare is part of the CPI. No, it isn't either. Much of our Social Security. We can point to it. We can say, well, yes, we do. We have a CPI. We have offices that follow this. And we have a Federal Reserve that's responsive to it. Right. Yeah, they've been real responsive to it over the last 10 years, haven't they? Yeah, ever since 9/11/01. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to love it. All right. Yeah, there. That's where is. Hey, no doubt about that. At any rate, folks, we've hit the top of the hour here. Once again, it's time to call it a night. We got the Maitre D' is running around. He's doing his last little bit of cleanup here. Checking out the new security system I had put in there. Yeah, I had to give him a code for it. Make sure he can get himself in and out of here without setting the alarm off and having a damn cop in the county down on the place. But once again, the waitresses have got the tables all piled high with the chairs. The lights have gone dim. But as always, cafe will be closing, but the bar will be open. It's your politics lobby for Patriots Unite, Voice Room on Pal Talk, where you can find us each week. Room generally opens each week at about 8 o'clock, folks. So it's, you know, if you want to be on the show, not a bad idea to get Pal Talk, download it, have some fun. There's plenty of rooms on Pal Talk for you to talk on. And, of course, we'll always stop over at HearnCo.com and see what's going on in the store over there. Always some fine items over in the HearnCo, over at Bob's store. But until then, folks, you know, got to call it a week. Hopefully be totally recovered from this next week. Have more to tell you about this jobs bill that went on. And that's about it. All right. Well, folks, thanks once again for coming down. Much appreciated. You have listened to the Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com. The best in Internet talk radio. Good night, folks. We'll see you all next week.